Hello, it's me, Nick. You're listening to the Silicon Sasquatch podcast. I am here to do a reading of my honorable mentions article for our most recent Game of the Year feature, which it's just wrapped up. Actually, hasn't quite wrapped up. We're going to publish Tyler's piece soon, but it's wrapping up as we speak, you know, right around end of March, as is normal for us these days. As you may know, if you've been subscribed to our podcast feed, or if you just follow our updates on Instagram or on our website at siliconsasquatch.com, I've been recording a lot of my articles that I've written, and I don't know if many people are listening to it or enjoying it very much, but I think it is kind of an interesting alternative to having to sit down and read a big old thing. And coupled with that, I think it offers some fun opportunities for me to do some digressions and get into the weeds a bit as I'm reading through it. Like if it jogs my memory or reminds me of any additional details I wish I'd snuck in the first place, it's a good chance for me to just sort of stop and weave that in. So yeah, without any further ado, I want to jump in and start reading this piece. So again, this is my what you normally call an honorable mentions piece. Basically, all these really are is each of the staff members of Silicon Sasquatch, as is tradition. We publish an individual piece where we highlight traditionally just the games we liked a lot that didn't make our top 10. But we've been doing this for 15 years now, give or take. Probably more than that. I can't remember. And mine especially have kind of evolved in some weird directions, and they end up being more of just sort of an end of the year reflection that goes in a bunch of different directions. Like I'll talk about the top 10 games in mine a bit, and I'll also talk about a bunch of other stuff, including things that are just not games at all. So yeah, I thought I would just go ahead and record this up in case anyone's out there not reading the site, but still on the podcast feed. Or if you're out there and you just miss hearing my voice for whatever reason, well, here it is. So let's jump in. The title of this year's piece is, calling it a piece sounds so ridiculous. My article is just called Nick Remembers Some Games, which is a nod to defector.com and the older days, the good old days of Deadspin back before it was cannibalized, resurrected, and then killed all over again. So yeah, let's remember some games. As 2022 drew to a close, I was possessed by the spirit of unrealized desires. I set a new goal for myself. I would watch 50 movies in a single year. I've always been good at delaying gratification, so much so that I often put off culturally and intellectually enriching activities just because I'm worried I'll enjoy them too much, that I'll, God forbid, burn through all the good things before I'm even remotely close to death. It's a foolish instinct that's rooted in perfectionism, which in turn is rooted in, well, all kinds of harmful nonsense, I suppose. Anyway, I achieved my target, and in fact, I even doubled it. I saw plenty of contemporary movies, and I also delved deep into a wide range of old classics and forgotten gems. And as an aside here, I linked to some of my Letterboxd lists and reviews here. I've been logging all my stuff on Letterboxd, which I found was pretty fun. And I wish that there was a good version of that for games. And before you ask, I've tried pretty much every version out there, and I don't like them. And maybe someday I'll build my own, but we'll see. Anyway, back to the article. So I enjoyed my time watching actually 98% of these movies, which is a pretty good rate. I can't think of, couldn't really ask for more. And I can also say that I've properly kickstarted a new habit. I'm going to the movies again, folks. It sounds so, I don't know, painfully normal to say this, but I've got to be honest. Setting goals really works. And goals are really important. It's surprisingly easy to fall prey to distractions and pointless routine in their absence. But when I declare to myself that I'm really going to do something and I go through the requisite motions, like writing it on a piece of paper, taping it to my wall, or telling enough friends that I'll end up feeling guilty if I don't follow through, or whatever it may be, more often than not, when I do those things, I achieve what I set out to do. And that leads to my current problem. Fresh off the rejuvenating and enriching results of my film journey, I spent the end of December wondering what worthwhile goals I could set for myself in 2024. I first thought of other media, like had I been neglecting books, for example. And yeah, a little bit. I only finished 17 books in 2023, which is barely more than half of my goal. Apologies to my Goodreads followers. What about music, though? You know, like, I'm kind of out of the loop these days, and once in a while I'll see what I can glean from Stereo Gum or whatever remains of Bandcamp's editorial team at this point. But setting goals for either medium didn't feel very compelling to me. I'd honestly rather just set an intention and see where that leads me. Alright, so that's that media, but what about video games? Well, part one. I don't like playing video games very much right now. But we have to talk about them, so here's a list of pretty much everything I played this year, sorted in alphabetical order. In the interest of brevity and scannability, I'll be using my own proprietary emoji system to describe these games. And since it's weird to read emoji out over a podcast, I'm just going to quickly riff on each of them as I go through them. I do like these emoji, though. For example, shout out to my favorite, which is Yeehaw, cowboy-friendly, for the cowboy emoji. There are a surprising number of cowboy-friendly games out this year. So here's the list. Alan Wake 2, really great game. I really enjoyed it. It's really clever, and it does some really cool things with cinema and audio and acting, and it's not a bad survival horror game in its own right either. Is it, like, top tier across the board? Perhaps not, but it punches so far above its weight that I don't even care. I love it. One of the best games of the year. Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. Cowboy friendly. Very cool game. I've only played an hour of it because I don't own it, but it is superbly cool. I would love to play it more. BABD. This is B-A-B-B-D-I. I think this is a weird French game that plays a lot like a Half-Life 1 mod. Cowboy friendly. Very cool. Baldur's Gate 3. I listed this as like a game I liked that also kind of broke my heart because it's got a hell of a learning curve if you, like me, have barely ever touched Dungeons & Dragons. It assumes you know Dungeons & Dragons, and it's not very forgiving if you don't. But I've played another 30 or 40 hours since then. I think it's pretty spectacular in most ways. It's no Disco Elysium, but like, why would I even say that? Nothing is. Castlevania Rondo of Blood. This game owns. It rules so hard. People who say it's the best Castlevania or their favorite Castlevania, totally justified. That might be true for me too at this point. Castlevania Symphony of the Night, probably the other one that might be the best one. Still great. Amazing music. Great animation. Cool sprites. Nice effects. The PS4 version has a new voice cast, which I think came from the PSP version. It's disappointing to those of us who played the original dub, but hey, what can you do? Castlevania Circle of the Moon. It was okay. I played through all three of the GBA games on my Analog Pocket this year. Not very good. Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance. Also not very good. I would say it's kind of trash, but it is cowboy friendly. Castlevania Aria of Sorrow. It's good. It's not the best one. Whoever says it's the best one probably hasn't played Rondo or Symphony recently. It's good, though. One of the better ones. Cocoon. This game made me want to touch grass in a good way, but also because I didn't really like it. I think it's kind of just not very engaging to play. The environment, Cocoon is a game of immaculate polish and deep consideration, and I think that it's too refined and too polished to be interesting anymore. Like, every interesting rough edge has been sanded down to the point where you're basically just kind of like slowly lumbering through a smooth, aesthetically pleasing but creatively kind of bereft environment, solving not puzzles, and kind of just, it just feels like it's a very guided experience in a way that is dissatisfying. I don't like it. I think it's actually kind of a bad game, but it is an incredible, each of its parts, though, is deeply admirable. Maybe not the actual puzzle design so much. There are some good ones, but some bad ones too. But art, visuals, sound effects, I would say overall concept, all excellent. It's just kind of a shame that I didn't really care for how it all came together. Counter-Strike 2. I heard someone say some racist stuff and I got killed a lot and I uninstalled it. So it's very much Counter-Strike still. I don't like it. Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty. Cowboy friendly. I wrote a lot about this in another article, which I think is also in podcast form. Diablo 4, trash, broke my heart. The only Diablo game I've never finished, and I finished all the other ones probably 10 to 20 times each, so Blizzard has completely lost the thread on this game, and you know, honestly, everything else at this point. So heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. Final Fantasy VII Remake Intermission. I liked it. It's got Yuffie. It's okay. It gets into some weird Dirge of Cerberus fan service, which I didn't know the game had any fans, and I don't think that that game was good. This is fine. It's got the Fort Condor minigame, which they've kind of expanded and redone, and that's great. It's just good. It's like a little taste of Remake, which after playing at this point, what, 25 hours of Rebirth, I would be much happier with just a little taste than this maximalist, whatever the fuck they've done with Rebirth. That's too much game, by the way. They should not have done so much game in one game. Just, all I really like about it is just the linear storytelling bits. Just let me hang with my guys and, like, let them tell me cool stuff. And, like, the cast is so excellent. The English cast, at least, is just, like, incredible. Their interplay is so good. They get the characters so great. That's true of Remake as well, and it's true of Intermission, but, gosh, ugh. Well, we'll talk about Rebirth at this year's Game of the Year, but yeah. Final Fantasy 16. Worst game I've finished all year, probably. Absolutely hate it. I think it's the worst Final Fantasy game, and I feel confident saying that because I've recently finished about the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 of them in the last 2 years. Terrible. Absolutely the biggest misstep they've ever made with the series. I hate it, and I hope that they never do anything like it ever again. I wrote a lot about this as well elsewhere, and I'm pretty sure I recorded a podcast for that too. So you can find that on the Silicon Sasquatch podcast feed or on our dang old website. F-Zero 99. Nobody's talking about this anymore, but Nintendo put out a free Battle Royale version of the Super Nintendo F-Zero. It's really cool. I played like an hour or two, and it's just like a nice little treat. God of War Ragnarok. I think this made our Game of the Year list. I can't remember for 2022. I sure liked it. I think it's a great little story with really good pacing and storytelling techniques. And yeah, delightful. Just great. I'm not a huge fan of like the big budget AAA stuff that Sony puts out for the most part, but this is precisely the right combination to get me sucked in. Just love it. Atreus, Kratos, all the main cast, all just really, really selling it. Hi-Fi Rush is a game that I thought was so cool, and except when I had to play it, and I thought it was actually obnoxious to play, and the setting and aesthetic were just, like, so aggravating after about 15 minutes. Not even the inclusion of a Fiona Apple song could save this game for me. Humanity. I played just the demo of Humanity, but this is a great little puzzle game that I would highly recommend seeking out if you like, you know, Choo Choo Rocket meets Lemmings. With a really cool aesthetic and visual style. Just super cool. Makes you use your brain, but not in a painful way. Love it. Jusant made me want to go outside. It's really boring and bad. It plays like an indie game from about 2009. Feels like it's lost in time. I don't know what Don't Nod is trying to do at this point with their company, but I love the idea of making smaller AA, single-A kind of caliber games, but man, there are like a lot better climbing games in the last couple years. You don't need to play this one. The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Now, here's the climbing game. Cowboy friendly. Made me use my brain a lot. Loved it. Excellent. One of the best games of the year. Unlike Breath of the Wild, I didn't 100% it, but I sank like 90 hours into it. That's a hell of a lot of time for me. Spectacular. If you loved Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, this is you know, essential playing for you. So make of that what you will for the 10,000 people out there who played Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. I see you. I recognize you. I'm one of you. Lies of P. Looks really good. Seems like a great Souls clone. It's just merely the best Souls clone out there. Still sucks. It's a bad version of Bloodborne. I don't recommend it. Yeah, skip it. Marvel Snap, gosh, I spent like so much time in the first half of this year playing Marvel Snap. I probably have sunk over 100 hours into the game at this point, which is more than I ever put into Hearthstone, more than I've ever put into any CCG. It's just brilliant. The short matches are great for just a quick break, but the deck building and theory crafting stuff goes pretty deep, and the devs at Second Dinner have done a really phenomenal job of keeping the the meta fresh and the card pool interesting and revising broken cards and broken strategies over time. Haven't played it in a while, probably since June, but cool game. I'll probably come back to it at some point and see how it's doing. Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales. Gosh, I wanted to like this game. I platinumed the original Marvel Spider-Man that Insomniac made. Not because I like loved every part of it, but because it was just a smooth, short, you know, 20 hours to 100% kind of open world game with a great little story and some great acting and pacing. And I like Miles Morales so much as a character. Like, and Across the Spider-Verse was one of my favorite movies of 2023. And I just don't really think they did a great job of, like, defining Miles Morales in the context of the game world. I don't think his powers are interesting. I don't think the missions are all that good. I don't think the overarching plot is told super well. The conflict with his friend, who ends up kind of being a rival, is just, like, not that great. Just kind of a downer game. Could have been a lot cooler. And it just feels a bit too, like, milquetoast, like, I don't know. Toothless. It feels toothless. Kind of a bummer. Not super surprising given both Insomniac's record and Disney's control of the Marvel license, but man, you know, in a year where we had a Spider-Verse movie, how do you not look at Miles Morales and think, God, this is so bad compared to that movie? Total bummer. I know the game came out not last year, but I just played it last year, so that's why you're hearing about it. Metroid Prime Remastered. What a great little treat to go back to, you know, 22 years ago and remember how great Metroid Prime used to be. Very cool. Nice update overall. I only played like 5 hours of it, but that was enough to just kind of remember how great it felt. Also made me want to go outside. The environments are just kind of like, it just feels like you're playing an old video game and it wants you to play for hours on end. And like, I'm like, no thanks, I want to go outside. Octopath Traveler 2. It's neat. I played a few hours of it. I've got about 4 or 5 characters now. I don't usually go for the nostalgia bait. Well, that's not a fair term to use, is it? Nostalgia evocative kind of aesthetic of the HD 2D or like retro remaster stuff of the JRPG world. I usually want something more ambitious and audacious, like, for example, Final Fantasy VII Remake Trilogy or like, I don't know. I did like Live Alive a lot, though, and it used a very similar aesthetic. And this just seems pretty good. The music is nice. The voice acting and writing is absolutely cornball. I don't think it's good. You could argue that it's good for what they're going for, but I just don't like what they're going for. I would much prefer some stronger writing and more believable characters, but it's a pleasant enough time, I guess. Pseudo Regalia is a, I think at this time, $6 indie platformer, third-person 3D platformer on Steam. Kind of feels like the closest to a Symphony of the Night movement scheme in 3D that I've ever encountered. It had really bad issues with navigation and level design and signposting and all that stuff when I played it in some ways. Other ways, the level design is pretty good, but I know a major update came out since I played it that added, for example, a map screen and things like that. So I would highly recommend checking it out if you like games that really focus on the feel of movement. It's pretty neat. Also, it's very easy to sequence break if you're looking for those kind of opportunities and you enjoy that kind of thing. Quake 2 Enhanced Edition. Cowboy friendly. This game moves so goddamn fast. It is just a real treat, and I never played it when it came out because I just didn't have a PC that could run it. But man, boy, you want to play just like a fast, crunchy, wet, immaculately paced shooter. Quake 2 is great. The Enhanced Edition is spectacularly nicely updated, and it's very cheap. So if you like retro shooters or the old school FPSs at the dawn of the true 3D era, this is a great game to check out. Resident Evil 4. It's neat. I played an hour at a friend's house. I don't own it. It's a nice update, kind of like the 2 remake that I played. The Root Trees Are Dead. Controversial in some circles because it uses AI-generated art. But it was offered for free as a result of that by the creator's own kind of decision, which I think is good. And it sounds like the creator's actually moving on and making a new version of it that uses original art from paid artists. And I think that's great. It's the only ethical use of AI I've really seen in a game so far. in my opinion. And it's also a pretty great little like mini Obra Dinn. That's, you know, like Return of the Obra Dinn meets going to your local county library to research a family. It's neat. Very cool. Free on itch.io. Go check it out. The root trees are dead. Sea of Stars, maybe the other worst game I played last year. It's dressed up like Chrono Trigger, and it's trying so hard to make you think it's Chrono Trigger, but it just feels terrible to play. The writing is atrociously bad. The main characters are empty shells with nothing interesting about them. And I don't mean to be so harsh. I actually kind of liked The Messenger, their previous game, a decent amount. I didn't finish it because I didn't really care for when it jumped to the 16-bit version too much. But I don't know. It's a game I wanted to like. They even got Yasunori Mitsuda to do some of the music, who also composed Chrono Trigger and other games that this one is aping. But it just is soulless. There are good things about this game. Visually, it looks pretty cool. A lot of the character sprites and stuff look nice. The combat design is okay to mid, I would say. It's not very good overall, but it's not the worst in a JRPG. It just is like... it's a game that, if you don't really think too hard and just kind of like play it mindlessly, you might think you're having a good time with a classic JRPG. But if you start to pay attention to any of the wrinkles or the faults, it all comes apart. I think it's a real, real mess of a game. I really dislike it. It's okay if you like it. It's okay if you like any of these games. I'm just trying to be honest. You know, as someone who grew up, you know, religiously following the JRPGs of the 1990s and early 2000s, this just feels like a pale imitation. It's too bad. I can tell the team really cared about doing this right, but I don't think that I think they made some pretty critical mistakes along the way, and it's too bad. Starfield, Cowboy approved. Fucking sucks. Maybe somehow the worst Bethesda RPG, at least in the last like 20 years. God, it's so sad. I didn't have high hopes for it, but I had some hopes, and I want to be clear. You know, I rag on Bethesda a fair bit, but I loved playing Oblivion when that came out. I've played through it twice in full, including the expansion. I know they can make stuff that I really enjoy. And, you know, even if I don't like other games that there's very much, like Fallout 3 or Skyrim, I've probably put 40 or 50 hours into both of those. You know, I don't hate them. They just don't do much for me. Starfield, I kind of hate, though. I don't like the combat in the slightest. I don't find the main or side stories interesting at all. It just... there's something just so unforgivably old and dated about the way that they present their systems in the game, the way that combat feels, the way you enter and exit dialogue with other characters, and the kind of just rigidity of the toolkit and limitations of the toolkit you have to actually meaningfully roleplay. Like in a year where Baldur's Gate 3 came out and after Disco Elysium came out, and those games have so many more verbs and tools you can use to play your characters and to see the world respond to it. It just is like, what are y'all doing? It's not even a good shooter. Ugh. I don't know. I mean, again, I know some people really love Bethesda out there. I'm not here to tell you. Again, this is just all my opinions. You don't have to care about them. I just, you know, this is just one person's voice saying that Starfield was not at all his thing. I thought it was really bad. It's really unfortunate. Strawberry Jam. This is a Celeste mod from the Celeste community with like a million new levels in it. Really, really good. I've only played a little bit of it so far, but I was really impressed by the kind of world select level they created. And like each of the levels I played have had interesting, nuanced, meaningful challenges. And I love also that they have levels for beginners, or at least, you know, like low level players, as well as like the real expert sickos out there like myself. And I'm not like a top tier Celeste player, but I was good enough to like, you know, practice speedrunning it for some time. And I've gotten, other than the winged strawberries, or what are they called? The golden strawberries. I've got like maybe five or six of those, but everything else in the game I've done. So it was great. I would actually, now that I think about it, really out of place no more. Street Fighter 6, I didn't like it, but I only played about 30 minutes of the demo, and I really just wanted to play as Ryu, or Ken, or, you know, ideally Sakura was my main in 4, but didn't get a chance to in the demo. Maybe the full game will be more my thing. Super Mario Brothers Wonder, maybe the best game of the year. I wish more people were talking about it in those terms. It's by far the best 2D Mario game since Super Mario World, in my opinion. And you could argue since Yoshi's Island, if you like that one. I don't think Yoshi's Island is as good as Mario World, but I know at least Tyler on our site feels that way. So fill in the blank for either of those Super Nintendo Marios. This is the best one since then. It's also the one that feels the most like that since then. And, you know, the title Wonder sounds kind of corny and kind of generic, but that's exactly the word for it. That's the feeling I had over and over and over again playing it. Like, I just couldn't wait to see what new thing they did. And that was true for every level I played. It's just an incredible gift of a game. And if you like to be delighted, you gotta play this game. It's just a treat. Super Mario RPG. This is the remake. It's good. It's really good. It's nice and polished. It's very incredibly faithful to the original Super Nintendo game. There's some nice post-game content for people like me who always wondered if, like, there would ever be a sequel or a follow-up to this game. Because they, you know, this was it's very surprising they ever made this, and I'm really delighted by what they did with it. Still holds up. Still a really sharp, funny, great little game. Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line. This is the Final Fantasy, etc. music game that's been around for a while. Played like half an hour. It seems like the best one of those. It's got an incredibly vast catalog. And who doesn't like Final Fantasy music? It's pretty cool. Thirsty Suitors is a game that conceptually I love. I just didn't care for how it plays. I don't think the battle system is all that fun. I think it takes way too long to say what it's trying to say in most of the dates or the battles, basically. I think that it's got some cool aesthetics and characters, and I love that it's just telling non-traditional stories in a medium that's full to the brim of very boring rote ones. Really, I love this game except for the part where I have to do the actual battles. I don't think that's a very fun system. I wish that had been heavily streamlined. But, you know, I think that its strengths more than make up for that, especially if you are less concerned with, you know, every game having a really great mechanical feel to it. It's cool. I think it's neat. I think you should check it out if that sounds interesting. Void Stranger, game of the fucking decade for me so far. I can't say much more about this than I already said in the Game of the Year write-up, but, oh boy, wow. I don't think a game has ever, not since The Witness have I maybe thought this hard about a game, both in terms of solving it and also after playing it. Incredible effort from a small, tiny two-person studio. Incredible game. It's not for everybody. I really do believe that now because I've bought or recommended copies of it for people, for, I don't know, half a dozen people. And so far, only one of them has actually finished it. So it's not for everybody. But, oh my goodness, just if you've been reading the site for a long time or following it for a while and you tend to align with my tastes, like, do not sleep on Void Stranger. Don't expect it to blow your mind immediately or anything like that, but if you like peeling back the layers of an onion and getting deeper and deeper and deeper and feeling like your hunches are being, you know, validated and confirmed, this is a game you absolutely must play. It's spectacular. One of the best games I've ever played in my life. Yakuza 0. Maybe not one of the best games I've ever played in my life, but one of the games I love the most in my life. This was my intro to the Yakuza series. I finally got into those games this year. It's a delight. The character work is incredible. I love a series that is willing to be melodramatic and lean into it without making fun of itself or kind of like killing the joke after it makes it. Yakuza wears its heart on its sleeve, and God bless it for that. If you're going to start with Yakuza, I would probably recommend Zero. Unless you really don't like the PS3 aesthetics and mechanics, which, you know, I get it, but really give Zero a try. If that doesn't do it for you, check out maybe Like a Dragon, which is 7. Yakuza Kiwami. So like I said, I played a bunch of these this year. It was okay. Probably the worst Yakuza game, but still pretty good. Worth playing if you like want to get the Kiryu story. Yakuza Kiwami 2. Way better than Kiwami. Very good. Great little, it's like an action movie story with a great villain. Really good little game. I also reviewed that on the site if you want to check that out. Yakuza 3 is divisive, and I loved it, though, because it takes place, I want to say, in Okinawa. It's got this kind of tropical vibe to it. It's way more relaxed. You have these very mundane slice-of-life moments more than in other games. In this one, Kiryu is running an orphanage. The orphans are all great characters who are fully realized and, like, interesting, and you befriend the local Yakuza on the island and become friends with them, and, like, if you want to see Kiryu cry, this is a good game to play, but just be prepared because that might also destroy you emotionally for a few days. We love Kiryu. Yakuza 4, I played about 10 hours. It's neat. I don't know. I want to see the other characters because it's the first multi-protagonist game in the series, but I'll keep playing from there. And then finally, Zero Ranger. This is a incredible game, also from the same developers as Void Stranger. They're called System Erasure. The best shmup I've ever played, or shoot 'em up. I still play it every now and then. Like, about once a month I'll fire it up and play for an hour or so and just go for a, see how far I can get without continuing. I have finished it. I've seen all the content. I even got the true ending, which requires you to, I don't want to say it, but boy, high risk, high reward, and hell of a game. Great music, great art, incredible design. I think this game took them about 10 years, and in fact, they're still working on it. Zero Ranger. Do not miss it if you like shmups, old school arcade games. Incredible. All right, so that's all 45 games I played in 2023. My personal top 10 list for games that released in the year. Number 10, The Root Trees Are Dead. Number 9, Armor Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. Even though I only played like an hour, that game owns. Number 8, Quake 2 Enhanced Edition. Number 7, Baldur's Gate 3. Although I would revise that now, probably a bit higher than the next couple. I'd probably put it at number 5, but yeah, we'll come back to that in a sec. Number 6, Super Mario RPG. Number 5, Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty. Number 4, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Number 3, Alan Wake 2. Number 2, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. And my game of the year was Void Stranger. So again, I wrote this a while ago. Now that I've played more Baldur's Gate 3 and thought about it more, I would reorder the top 5 to be 5, Baldur's Gate 3, 4, Alan Wake 2, 3, Tears of the Kingdom, 2, Mario Wonder, and 1, Void Stranger. So, otherwise, keep it the same. Anyway, woof. Man, that was a lot. Are you bored? I'm a little bored talking about games all day. Let's forget this. Let's talk about something else. Part 2. Controlled Demolition. I have successfully blown up my life, or had it blown up for me, a handful of times now. And I regret to inform you that it's not the kind of thing you get better at. I lived in another country for most of 2023. I'm now back in the United States. Although I'd hoped for a smooth re-entry, things have instead been slow, frustrating, and confusing. I had to give up a lot to move overseas in the first place, and I left just about everything else behind on my way back here. I'm still coming to terms with what that means. One thing I heard before moving abroad is that you'll never feel completely at home wherever you end up. Nor will returning to your home country ever feel completely like home again. In my experience, at least, that's the truth. I landed back here on unsure footing, teetering on the edge of what's commonly called middle age. Being middle aged doesn't mean I can't do anything, it means that everything I try feels even more important now. The skewed way my brain interprets the world these days is, if I mess up now, that mistake has a multiplying effect on how the rest of my life will go. So each failure is more devastating now than it used to be, and each success is more vital. Do I want to be able to retire, for example? When I was younger, I would tell myself that I don't care about retirement, that I want to find fulfilling work instead, and if you love what you do, as my the adults in my life told me, you'll never work a day in your life, which is utterly insane. But yeah, I was young then. I didn't actually realized that I was taking my health for granted in this equation. Like, I just assumed that I would always be able to work, for example, and that I'd always be able to work at my peak, even, which is ludicrous, I realize. And, you know, now, frankly, I don't think fulfillment is necessarily on the table any longer. I think I equivocated a bit too much, and I waited too long for perfection to arrive, and I probably sold myself short too many times. I've been thinking a lot lately about all the paths I wanted to take when I was younger, paths that led organically from my strengths and deepest passions. Like, playing music was a huge part of the first half of my life, and then I all but abandoned it. And writing, too. I had so much promise as a writer, if many of my teachers and friends are to be believed. Though I will admit that I'm a bit afraid of what you're thinking right now as you hear me say all this. Like, I don't know. If you're still listening at this point, we're like 35 minutes into this dang old thing, you must, like, not hate my writing. But, you know, I'll be honest, I still think I'm a pretty good writer. And that's not an objective truth. You can disagree with that. But, yeah, I don't know. I kind of hoped that I could find a way to do it every day and to be recognized for it in a way that, like, you know, it was part of how I made my living. So far, that hasn't been the case. Anyway, I let both of those goals, music and writing, atrophy out of fear, mostly, and I admit also a certain grounded pragmatism. The world doesn't pay writers and musicians well, and in this country, not getting paid well almost always means living a more precarious life, one where your health and your future are both poker chips on the table. Anybody who works for a living exists in a sort of limbo state. They're usually lacking fulfillment or stability in one or more key areas of their life, but they're unable to make the puzzle pieces fit just right and achieve homeostasis. I want to always appreciate the many things I'm fortunate to have right now, even as the things I don't have loom large in the background. I believe it's really important to set goals, but the hardest thing isn't deciding what those goals are. It's actually waking up every day and choosing to work toward them, all the while fully aware that you don't have, and maybe never have, the things that they point toward. Like, a big part of me still wants to make games. In fact, that's what I've been doing for the past few months. It's, frankly, as an aside here, what I was doing in San Francisco this week at GDC. But the work I've found, creatively and intellectually rewarding as it is, has been inconsistent and unsustainable. Someone who's good at the economy, please help me budget this. My family is dying. I can't keep this up forever, but what can you do? It's hard out here. I link out to an article here about the rampant layoffs in the game industry in the last, you know, in this year versus the last 2 years, which were also quite egregious. As of this recording, there's been at least 8,000 people laid off in 2024. We'll likely see many more before the year is out. And that's, yeah, man. If only there was a way, a mechanism by which workers could come together and collectively bargain for better stability and control over the terms of their employment and their conditions of work. That would be pretty cool if that existed. If that exists, someone should let me know. Part 3. Place your faith and embrace the void. The best game I played all year, the one and only game I really deeply connected with, is Void Stranger. It is an experience that not many people I know shared with me, though they did give their best effort to give it a fair shake. It's been an important lesson for me, one that gets all tangled up in the ancient parts of my understanding of myself, that I can like things that other people don't like, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. And sure, I would love nothing more than to write or speak for hours about how wonderful this game is, but I honestly don't know how. I don't even know that I'm up to the task, even. Thankfully, game composer and designer Lena Rain already did a really stellar job of that, and you can find that post on her co-host page. I linked to it in the article as well. Meanwhile, I did my best in our Game of the Year post, but as of this writing, I realized this isn't a game that I can be very objective about. It found me, though, and it provided what I needed at just the right moment. Even its faults, which I'd be happy to enumerate, are at least interesting to me. It's like when you go on a promising few dates with somebody and realize they're not just someone you like, but something far more significant than that. That's what Void Stranger is to me. Well, not someone I'm dating, but, you know, significant it's significant. There's a quote here I need to read as well. This is in a screenshot, but a quote from the game, which is actually a paraphrasing, I believe, Dante's Inferno. "For these defects, and for no other evil, we now are lost and punished just with this. We have no hope, and yet we live in longing." Void Stranger is a game about navigating a labyrinth. It's also about a bunch of other things, many of which would be a shame to disclose to you up front, but I can at least note that it's heavily inspired by, if not outright allegorical to, Dante's Divine Comedy. The above screenshot, which I just read, is a quote from Inferno, when Dante Alighieri, and is that how you say it? Alighieri? It's Italian, I don't know that. And Virgil are wandering through the first circle of hell, Limbo. This is, according to Wikipedia, because it's been a million years since I read it, where the virtuous pagans resided. They were good, righteous people, but they were not Christian. Into the bin they went. To be good, but to not be deemed correct, is maybe the root of all tragedy. I lived abroad in a good place, but it didn't feel correct. I came back to a place that used to feel correct, but it no longer does. I'm working in a field I've always harbored a deep passion for, but it's unlikely that I'll ever be able to sustain myself in this field. I've applied to grad school with a vague but genuine desire to do something completely different with my life, but my doubts grow each day as time passes since I submitted my application. I'm most employable in an industry controlled by petulant would-be god kings and a cabal of impossibly wealthy investors, most of whom have recently chosen to deprive hundreds of thousands of their workers of a livelihood in order to spike their share prices to stratospheric new heights. I mention these things not as an attempt to garner woe-is-me sympathy, but to illustrate several of the many dimensions that this condition of being separated from the building blocks of a fulfilling life can take. We have no hope, and yet we live in longing. Each of us dreams of certain things. Most of our dreams aren't particularly outlandish either. For me, it's simple. Deep, genuine, nourishing connections with different people. A lifestyle that grounds me in my body, my community, and my bioregion. And the means to find meaningful work and revitalizing play in the days ahead. I've had some of these things in various points in my life, yet I remain unfulfilled. Eventually, I found myself in a place where it seemed impossible that I would ever have them again. And so, I deemed my life good, but not correct. When we get stuck, and when our dreams feel endangered, we can either sit tight and hope things get better, or we can make the difficult decision to try something else. I haven't enjoyed playing video games very much because there's a massive lack of resolution in my life right now, and games usually feel like a distraction at best. Many cornerstones of my life remain up in the air, and I recently came to understand that it's not because they fly with their own wings, but because I'm juggling them myself. So I find myself in this bizarre situation where I love games, you know, I care deeply about them, and I'm compelled to keep expressing myself in this medium, but I cannot find hope in them right now. I might need to look elsewhere. One of the things I loved about my movie journey last year was how bountiful things felt. After so many years removed from this medium I loved, I had literally hundreds of films waiting for me that I was thrilled to finally see. The games will be there, whenever and however I'm ready to come back to them. But there's a whole life out there that I want to bring shape and definition to, and it's not going to happen unless I make it happen. I don't know where I'll be writing next year's update from, or what I'll be spending my time doing, but I do know that, no matter how it looks or even feels sometimes, I'm not stuck anymore. The work is already happening. I'm already doing it.